This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. The last few years have truly been a rollercoaster ride for wealth managers and financial advisors navigating market twists and turns, a wave of new regulation, and the ever-growing array of investment products and solutions. We've brought together a small but strong panel of experts to answer some of the key questions we've been hearing from advisors recently. Here with me is Richard Roman-Lee, CEO of Square Mile, Connor Sloman, Managing Director for UK at Morningstar, and James Crosley, Head of UK Wholesale at LGIM. So I'm going to start off with a nice and easy question. What's been the biggest thematic change you've seen in the market and your businesses over the past 5 years? Richard, I'm going to come to you first.
That is the most difficult, easy question that I've ever asked in my life. To me, it's to do with the realisation that financial advice is important, that the financial advice industry has become incredibly professional in the aftermath of the regulatory change. It was the retail distribution review, and the opportunities to grow financial advice businesses and to serve a greater number of people. And who's realised that? Internationally, the UK wealth market is recognised as a professional, exciting, growing market, and it's attracting businesses from all around the world of all different shapes and sizes to help grow the market, consolidate the market, and deliver better outcomes for clients.
Thank you, Richard. Connor?
The only thing that I would add to that would be the successful adoption of new technologies throughout the industry, I think, has been, you know, very impressive, very impactful. And I think with a backdrop, as Rich mentions, you know, regulation or increased focus on sustainability of investments, you know, the need to actually leverage technology and increasing amounts of data to actually meet investor outcomes and engage with investors is paramount.
Great. And nothing more exciting than the future. So my next question is, what emerging trends do you think will come through in the next few years? Connor, can you get your crystal ball out?
Sure. Well, I think I'd probably start with AI. And, you know, at Morningstar, we've been using AI. We've launched a chatbot to facilitate engagement with our research. You know, we've now got like 40 years of research within Morningstar's walls. And we just want to facilitate the access to that research from advisors, from investors. So we've launched a generative AI chatbot. Now, I think more broadly within the industry, we're going to see the leverage of generative AI just to make people's roles more efficient. You know, that concept of never starting from scratch again. I think you'll see advisors having emails written for approval before going out to clients, meeting notes taken, CRMs populated. So I think you'll see businesses becoming a lot more efficient on the back of AI use. And I think very much looking forward to seeing the developments in the industry, new wealth tech firms launching new capabilities. That'll be pretty exciting.
Really interesting. Thanks, Connor. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Connor, which doesn't always happen. Okay. But thinking to the future, I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, the ability for the industry to be more personal in the service and outcomes it seeks to provide for its customers will be greatly improved by a combination of the focus on outcomes that actually any sensible business should have in whatever it's doing. What's the experience and the need of its customers or the desires of its customers? So I think the focus on outcomes, the adoption of technology and the ability to actually craft something that's relevant for each individual, because everybody's financial circumstances, everybody's aspirations and needs are different. And the ability to actually develop a truly personalized service and personalized solutions, I think will be transformational. And I hope, and maybe this is a forlorn hope at the same time, that our clients or the clients of advisors and wealth managers, they need to be engaged with their savings because it's really important. And I hope that need will be facilitated using the technology that Connor talks about and the intent that the industry is using to deliver a much more intuitive, interactive, personalized, more satisfying service and industry.
Just to add to that, I think that's really important. You know, not only the personalization of the investment solution, but also the engagement of the investor. And what was that Mark Twain quote where, sorry, I wrote you a long letter, I didn't have time to write you a short one. I think increasingly advisors will be able to very quickly summarize longer investment reports to provide more bite-sized information get that into the hands of their end clients and really engage on an ongoing basis based on those investors' preferences as to how they want to be communicated. That isn't something we've seen before, and I think we'll see a lot more of that going forward. Video, audio, snippets.
Yeah, and look, there's a cultural shift that's required, but is palpable. We can see it around us. And that's an industry which, you know, the finance industry, people in the industry have made a lot of money over the years. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as their customers are making money. But the regulatory focus to make sure that people are doing well alongside their customers, not at the expense of their customers, has never been more important. It's the right thing to do. It's the fun thing to do. And ultimately, it will determine the sustainability or otherwise of this industry.
James, I want to bring you in here based on your conversations with UK wholesale clients. Looking at advisor appetites and how they've changed over the past few years, what are the new trends and themes emerging in terms of advisors' appetites?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to recognise is that centralisation has created larger buyers who have the power to buy and move more money. And I think what's come with this centralisation is information hunger. So we definitely have a greater depth of questioning coming through, larger RFPs, more data, as Connor and Richard have said. So people are information hungry and they want it yesterday. So we have to be very responsive as an asset manager to provide that information. Of course, cost is an obvious item that comes through. People do want a better deal. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but certainly asset managers have had to think about how they price certain asset classes. And if I was to look forward, I think what the last few years of volatility have taught us is that there are other asset classes out there beyond the conventional cash, fixed income and equities. The big issue, of course, and the square we're trying to circle is how do you bottle that? So how can we give access to our intermediaries and their clients to private assets, real assets, when they often require a daily dealt liquid fund? But I think if we can find a solution to that problem, then I do think that portfolios will become more diverse in the future.
Great. Thank you, James. So actually, nice segue into the next question I have. So finding the most suitable solution for clients, it feels more challenging now than ever. And there's so many debates going on. You've got the everlasting index versus active one. That's still a hot topic. Then there's model portfolios versus multi-asset funds. And of course, just seems to be very difficult to find standout funds in any sector. So does fund manager selection really matter anymore? Richard, I'm going to put that to you first.
Yeah, look, very much so. There's quite a lot to unpick there. So let's go back to personalization. Actually, whether it's active or passive, exchange traded or mutual, open-ended, closed-ended, and even now mandated, it shouldn't really matter. It's what's the right mix of those to deliver the outcome that individuals need. So that would be my first thing. And the answer is, actually, if you're doing your job properly, it's probably a combination of all of them. That's the first thing. The second thing, and I think you might come onto this in a bit, as you talk about model portfolios versus a multi-asset fund. The way I think about it is pre-RDR, so up to about 10 years ago, most of what was bought or sold to investors in the market was a fund, and that was a one-size-fits-all, which was designed by an insurance company or typically an asset manager. Post-RDR, with the emergence of the power that wealth managers and financial advisors have, you became, along with that came the managed portfolio service, the model portfolio service, which is basically building solutions at a company level, the advisor or wealth management company level. And increasingly we're seeing now, and I think this will happen a lot more over the next 10 years, we're seeing the rise of directly invested portfolios or personalized portfolios. Now, so that's a sort of trend, but it doesn't mean to say people shouldn't use funds or MPS or directly invested. I think we'll see a combination of all of them. And the tech that Connor talked about earlier was very much about facilitating people pulling the right stuff together. So I kind of think that's where we go. And absolutely most people in creating a financial plan, particularly in accumulation, most people aspire to something in the future, which is typically more than they have now. And therefore, picking the right investments and the right approach within those investments, if you get that right, and you can, and it makes a material difference, you will help people achieve their goal quicker or a greater ambition than if you don't.
And maybe just to add, because I agree with Rich, and I think that manager selection is actually happening within the solutions itself. So You've got manager selection on the actual product level, and then around the edges and in terms of personalization and linking investment solutions to preferences and desired outcomes, you will also see that, you know, the need as well.
Yeah, and to pick up on what James was saying, thinking about people's pursuit of, let's say, alternative assets, so assets beyond those traditionally you'd find in a portfolio. We know in the institutional world, for example, and in a lot of wealth world, that people access alternatives, and there's a wide range of alternatives. Let's think about private markets, private equity, private debt. Actually, it's quite hard to access those. It's quite hard to access those through the fund structures or some of the fund structures that we have now. And there's this mismatch between the daily liquidity that the regulator tries to encourage, notwithstanding the LTAFs, and people demand, and actually the need to invest over 10, 20, 30 years. So I think we see people be more discerning about the vehicles they use and the assets they use, depending on what your investments are. So you can hold stuff in DC, in pensions, right, for the long term. You don't need daily liquidity, and so LTAFs or other vehicles can come into there. And goodness knows what tokenization will do with that when that comes in. Whereas in other areas where people are more exposed to the short-term human traits and might not be able to save themselves from selling something when it's gone down, they might have different strategies. And I think that we're at the cusp of being able to solve a lot more of that complexity as well, which will be interesting, it'll be fun, and it'll be a challenge.
Really interesting. Thank you. James, it would be great to get your thoughts on this, actually, given LGIM offers both an MPS and a range of multi-asset funds. We're probably largely neutral in that debate. Just following on from Richard's points earlier, can you just give me your thoughts on what you see kind of advisors seeking? Do they often use both? Do they just stick to one?
Yeah, and look, neutral is the right word, because ultimately we provide all three services. So, you know, our distribution strategy, as you'd expect, is purposely eclectic so that we can meet the needs of whatever those customers require. I respect that some groups are more biased to one or t'other, but actually at LGIM, you want to build your own, you can come to us. You want an established multi-asset vehicle with different risk ratings, you can. If you want to talk to us about buying an off-the-shelf MPS or indeed running a bespoke MPS with you, we can do that as well. And I think that's a sensible strategy for the future.
Great, thank you. So moving on, unsurprisingly, regulation is never too far from advisors' minds. We've got Consumer Duty and SDR being some of the latest rules to get to grips with. So how have these developments affected fund research? Have you seen an increase in advisors seeking your help based on these new regulations?
It sometimes feels like in our industry, where the vast majority of people are trying to do the right thing and do the right thing, that we're all regulated in the event that we're going to do what the minority of people do. On balance, it's the right thing because we've got to look after our customers. Regulation is trying to force the right culture in businesses. I think people's behaviour is inherent, right? And culture is really important. Put the customer first. What the regulation is doing is facilitating the speed at which the industry has become more professional. RDR was a massive stroke that turned what was a transactional model paid by the manufacturer to a service model paid by the customer. Consumer Duty focusing much more on various customer outcomes. And this goes back to how important our industry is to help people with their savings and their financial futures. And with SDR, actually thinking about the intentionality of their investments. And the fact is, and it depends who you ask, only 8, 9 or 10% of people take financial advice in this market, which tells me 90, 91, 92% don't. And that's not good. There are events in people's life where you need financial planning and financial advice because it's really complicated. The range of outcomes you're trying to do, the opportunities you have, the tax, the prioritization. And so regulation is making sure that the right thing's being done at pace. And do you know what? Most people embrace it and for what it is and evidence they're doing the right thing. But also think that regulatory stipend, which is getting more expensive in time and money, to look, is forcing businesses to think about how they scale their businesses. So some of this consolidation we were talking about beforehand, because it's getting harder, not impossible, to stay small and independent without, you know, with all this extra burden upon you. But generally, it's all there in the right spirit to help investors end up in the right place, which has got to be a good thing.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's that focus on investor outcomes and transparency, you know, is important. I would say that I think now, you know, with consumer duty coming into a force, I think it's just, you know, let's just see it play out. Let's not bring out another raft of regulations. I think we're in a pretty good place here in the UK. And now let's, you know, just you know, really focus on the investor and the outcomes that they need. The only other thing that I would just add is in terms of the value assessments within consumer duty, we have definitely seen a lot of advisors and platforms coming to us, you know, just for help with their product shelf and, you know, do they have the appropriate products? And I think we both agree that there are a proliferation of products out there. And, you know, if that drives some consolidation of products just to make, you know, the jobs of advisors for investors easier in terms of selecting investments, I think that could be a good thing.
I was just going to add that from a sort of manufacturing base is the points that you raised is that, you know, we need regulation. I think when I speak to advisors and wealth managers, as Connor alluded to, they want a break from anything new. They've got a lot to deal with SDR, the UK regime and consumer duty. And they just need a bit of a pause, right? Because it's often the same project team and the same team, particularly at small businesses, have to deal with these things. And just a point on active versus index, because obviously we're a large index house that also do active. So we're very proactive as well as index. I think that active funds have been lambasted rather unfairly in the press and in other mediums over the last few years. And Connor and Rich are right. At the end of the day, there are some very good human beings out there that can beat the market over time, and we need to give them time to perform. So I'm very pro having a blend. And indeed, if you talk about MPS, some of the most successful MPS provisions in the market are blended, right? That's the word that people say. I like blended. So I do think that active management deserves a break. There may be too many funds, and there may be too many funds that underperform, but we do need discovery in this industry. And that's coming from someone who has a very large index business. So there is definitely a place for both. But as Connor and Rich allude to, you need good oversight and research and governance, and maybe the industry needs to shrink a little in terms of its offering.
Yeah, I worry. So I completely agree on your blend. So our active portfolios blend active passive, because you're trying to meet the outcomes of a return, adhere to a risk profile within an acceptable cost. And Connor's right, the consumer duty has the value, it's a cost and value outcome, has really focused people's minds on how much people are paying and how you demonstrate value. And I just worry that it's quite hard to demonstrate the value of financial advice, but it's incredibly valuable, doing the right thing at the right time. Like, how do you put a price on deciding to provide protection rather than investing or whatever it is? But I worry in all of this, the focus on cost means that people are abandoning active management, which has had a tough time given QE and given narrowness of markets and so on. I just worry that people are abandoning something which actually in the long term is proven to deliver a better outcome for customers. And I wonder in 5, 10, 20 years time, that we might rue the lost opportunities that people might have had because of that.
Absolutely. So my last question: in your view, what would need to happen to markets and regulation to improve customers' outcomes, Connor?
Well, I think when we think about customers' outcomes, I think critically we want to see people investing early in their lives and staying invested throughout that journey. Now, obviously, you know, advisors play a very important role here. I think, you know, the government do as well. I think auto-enrolment has clearly been, you know, a success. What we're about 10 years in and we're seeing participation go up from like the 40% to like the 80%. But, you know, it's just vital that, you know, we're seeing investors engaged on an ongoing basis with that investment journey, particularly when people are starting out their investing journey. Actually, you know, engaging with people in their 20s in an appropriate way, you know, will be critical. And I think there was an element of, like, you know, financial literacy needed here, whereby, you know, that hasn't really been much of a focus. And I think that, you know, when we think about, you know, the mass markets, you know, do people really understand, you know, investments, and are they getting appropriate education at the right time in a right place where it's actually going to really resonate with them. So I think there's a lot more that we can be doing in relation to financial literacy and that ongoing engagement to really ensure that that journey is successful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Connor. I think markets are markets, plus ça change, though, was that they're too big to get your head around, and they reflect an aggregate of human behaviour, which we know doesn't really change very much, right? So markets are markets. I think the regulators actually are doing a pretty good job at putting the right framework in to make people think about their customers and evidence that they're doing that. It forces people to behave in the right way. But actually, the one place where this might be slightly controversial, where there isn't a culture of taking responsibility, is amongst the public. It's a societal issue. Like, we all care about our football teams, our partners, our kids, what we're going to eat for supper. It's extraordinary that people don't take, there isn't a culture of being more responsible for your financial wherewithal over the longer term. Too much is laid on employers, too much is laid on the states. And somehow, if we can collectively create a culture where people think about that and take responsibility about it, it'd be great for the industry, but it'll be even greater for everybody in the country.
Yeah, just to really reinforce what both the gents have said, you know, when you look at the national curriculum, I'm passionate about education, and it always amazed me that when we left school, the two things we didn't do was health and wealth. You didn't do first aid as standard, and you didn't talk about finance. And I think that's slowly filtering in, but it feels like it's extracurricular as opposed to curricular. So I think we just got to keep pressure on whatever government we have. To, you know, if you're going to do maths, if you're going to do economics at school, why are you not doing personal finance? It seems like a no-brainer. So I think we play a massive part in that. And I know there's lots of bodies and forums, and indeed people around this table will all give their time to it. But I think we just need to be mobilised in a better way, working with government to help our kids leave school with a basic understanding of mortgages, pensions and savings.
Great. Well, fingers crossed for the future. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.